Chris. I'm a developer evangelist for Yahoo. Developer evangelist basically means I'm a translator from geek to non-geek. So I make developers and normal people in the office talk to each other rather than talk in parallel or say one thing and do another, which is a job that is rather new, and I just made it up myself, more or less. Other companies had some like that before, but it's an interesting role for me because I have to deal with people that don't want to communicate technology or don't want to understand technology, and at the same time I've got other guys that are like 12-year-old kids on sugar rush about technology, and make them work together and build the best products possible. So if you have somebody who is already a techie and a geek, but can talk to other people in your company, or you know somebody like that, buy him drinks, make him happy, because you don't find these people very often. Because a lot of times developers are in their own little world, and if you don't talk in the right language to them, you will not get the thing you wanted to have. So today I'm going to talk a bit about developing with the web rather than developing for the web. We've been doing development, web development for about 14, 16 years, and we still have not quite grasped that the web is there to develop with it rather than for it. We just build things, put them on the web, and hope that they work. But first of all, if you look at the media nowadays, we realize that the end is near. Like, everybody's like, oh, recession, nobody spends money on anything. Funnily enough, at the same time, all the shops are full of people that buy stuff, and you see new cars driving around and these kind of things. Every time when somebody shouts at me like, oh, recession, I'm like, do you see people queuing up for bread? No, it's not a recession yet. Saying that, with my blog, I made about $2,000 a month with text links about 3 years ago. Nowadays, I make about $200 a month with that. So we have to realize that something is changing drastically in the web, and that we cannot do it the same way we've done in the last few years. So what we've done in the last few years, we basically built something, and then people came, and they loved it, and like, ooh, best website ever. Look, I've got a domain with a little bit of content on it. Please come and click my links. And that doesn't work anymore. And the reason is basically that people are not going to only one website, but people are actually distributing themselves over the web. They're otherwise busy on other websites. They're otherwise busy looking things up. They're otherwise busy listening to music, playing games. The web has become a much more ubiquitous media in our life than it used to be beforehand. Beforehand, I went to a website, I read something, I bought something, I went away, and I did my normal job again. So when we go back in time, so when I started as a web developer in 1996, computers were dead slow, and they had things like Windows 3.11 on them if you're really unlucky. The problem with that one was when you went to a website, you had one window. When you wanted to have several websites open, you had to open another browser window, and half of your RAM was already gone. And as the RAM was like 64K or something like that, it was not a fun thing to do. So pop-up windows were really annoying back then. The other day I found a 4 Mac RAM module in my house, and I'm like, what the hell am I going to do with this one right now? But it's quite fun, and you see that how computers accelerated since then and how they got better. The browsers were bad. The browsers allowed you to look at one thing at a time and then leave it and go to another thing. So it was very important to have like one website, and people were concentrating on your website, and if they didn't find in the first few seconds what they were looking for, they were going to the competition. But it was basically people have still had one thing in mind, and they had a chat client on the side, maybe some IRC client, but that was about as much as the computer could do for you. Then the Web 2.0 revolution came. The Web 2.0 revolution was an idea to turn the web from like just a TV channel or a radio channel to something where I give back. So instead of just consuming content, people started writing content. Instead of having software applications on my computer and having to install them and then try to get them out of the registry because bloody Windows 95 wouldn't do it anymore, we moved all the software onto the web. Now with Google Docs, I don't need Word anymore, for example. I can do my spreadsheets, I can write my documents all online. If I'm online. If I'm not online, there's still a problem, but we're fixing that as well. So computers are getting better, browsers are getting better, and people started to actually use the web for much more than just consuming your website, looking at your website. People chat on the websites. People write texts on the website. People edit photos on the website rather than going to a special kind of software. And this is something that we have to realize, because that also means that people are busy otherwise. They don't look at your website. They don't care about what it looks like, unless it's really, really ugly, which sadly enough, 90% of the web still is. And it distracts them what's going on around them. It's more important for the early adopters to actually go on the web and tell the world about what they're doing. That's where Twitter came in as a perfect product. Just tell the world what you're doing. If they want to know, it doesn't really matter. If you have something to say, great. If not, you still do it.
So there's lots of noise going on the web. People just write things, people put things up, and try to get found, try to play systems to talk to each other that people follow them on Twitter, although they're really boring. And all of these things you have to think about when you build something where you want people to come. There's no way you can do this, because all of this information makes people much more distracted than anything else. We don't even look at things anymore, we just want to have them. We want to be the first one to talk about that piece of news, we want to be the first one to talk about that new piece of software, and then we look for the next thing. We don't even follow up what people answer us, we just want to be known as the first guy in social media to have done that. So it's a bit of an ADD going on in the whole web right now, and it's a perfect media for that. Be aware of that, whatever you do, that people will not come to your website and will not love you for it. They will come for the product that you have, and if it does something for them easier than the competition does. And that's the only way you can bring it in. The problem with that one is that you cannot do websites like it did before and hope that people come and hope it will be a success because it has a great name or because it's actually a nice site. You have to understand that people are busy on these social networks. They don't surf the web anymore the way they used to. They surf social networks. They connect. They find information not by using search engines, but by getting recommendations from their friends. Which to me is a great thing, because I don't trust a computer to know what I want to find. If I put Apple in a search engine, I probably want to look for hardware. My mother probably looks for apples or recipes. A search engine cannot tell me that. In a social network, if I go on Twitter and say, like, hey, I need to get some news about Apple, five of the people that I know will recommend me, hey, there's a new iPod out. If my mother goes, if she were on the web, if my mother would do that, her friends would tell her, hey, here's a great new recipe about apples. Computers are stupid. They just take things in and put things out. A human has to tell them how to do that. Artificial intelligence is a nice enough thing, but it's not as far as we think it is. If you can't fight them, join them. That's what Captain Obvious here says. One interesting thing is that by opening our mind and opening our eyes to the social web, we can actually benefit from that. If we embrace the social media rather than trying to game it or try to put our site somewhere where they shouldn't be, we will have people that talk about our products, talk about your domains, talk about the domain that they got from you in a fashion that other people trust them. It's all about trust. It's all about knowing people and learning from other experience. So a lot of people follow me on Twitter because I write about things that I found out. Not about why I'm cool or my hair or whatever. It's just I write things that I do and hey, here we go. Oh, cool, this is great, I want to see it as well. So a lot of stuff that I do on Twitter is posting links of interesting things I just seen. And as not as many people have the benefit that I have, that it's my job to look for cool stuff on the internet, other people just don't have the time to do that. So instead of going through a search engine, they subscribe to my Twitter. Cool, there's some links that might be interesting. The idea is nowadays that you don't start with a static page, but you start with a content management system. And there's free ones out there. WordPress works perfectly, Drupal, movable type, whatever you want to use, they're really easy to install and it's not magic. And if you use something like Supercache, which is a plugin for WordPress, it also generates hard-coded pages for you. So not every time you get a hit, your database gets hit. It's basically a static HTML page, which is much better for performance. So you then go, you take all your content and put it out on the web. You spread it out on the web, and not just spread it out, but use the systems in the way they're thought to be used. So, seeing LinkedIn, you put all the profiles of the people on your website on there, and you let them maintain it, because it's their profile. When I was a web developer, people always asked me to build like about pages on their website and send me like five photos of their people, and say like, ooh, say what they do and say what they are. And I'm like, that's not an about page. An about page should tell me, what is this person about, what is he passionate about, what does he do? And if I put the profiles on LinkedIn and tell people, hey, put your data on LinkedIn and we pull it back into the site, this is your profile. If you leave the company, we can just delete it that way easily. Otherwise, we have to delete you from the about page. I found myself on about pages of websites of companies I left 8 years ago because nobody looks at these things anymore. But I myself keep my LinkedIn profile updated, and that way that data would be fresh on the website as well. Delicious is great for links, and it means that people actually tag those links as well and put descriptions on those links. YouTube is great for video because it converts the video to what you need on the web. It gives you a copy and paste code that other people can put that video on their blog and make it viral about your product. And this is how YouTube works. Nobody cares at YouTube about the page too much. It's all about the outgoing and embedding. It's all about people embedding videos in their blogs and that way you piggyback on people's integrity. If somebody goes to my blog and I put a YouTube video up there, they know it's something technical about web development. They know it's a great video, an interesting video, rather than just go to YouTube and trying to find one.
Can we take the Google ads off of YouTube videos? Because I noticed they're dropping out little Google ads,
I think for the moment not. I would be surprised if they didn't come up with a premium service where they say, like, don't show any ads. You can turn off the annotations if people put like these arrows and these things on there.
Yeah.
That you can turn off. But the Google ads, of course, they realize it costs a lot of money doing video. So they have to make money somehow. And it costs a lot of money doing streaming video. We realized it with live.yahoo.com as well.
It's just so hard to get the eyeball that all of a sudden is shooting off.
That's the question. I would say no, because I trust in user testing. Banner blindness is a wonderful thing. Like, we had terrible, ugly, ugly ads on our sites, but a lot of users never ever realized them because they actually got conditioned by surfing the web already that something on the right-hand side that is a block is an ad and is not relevant to what I'm actually looking at. So I wouldn't be too scared of that. If you have things like that, the best way of doing it is showing to some people and say, like, what do you think of this website? What do you think of this video? And they will remember the peeing monkey and not the pop-up ad. It's quite scary. I mean, I'm happy that YouTube makes money with it, because YouTube is the easiest way out there. Another very good video service is Vimeo.com, which doesn't have any ads on it and has a high-quality video. And Vimeo is also one of the best usability things out there. It's like you can upload your video while you're signing in for the website, and that is such a great idea. This is the kind of stuff that I love on the web, like both YouTube, Yahoo Video. Like, you want to upload a video, you go there, you have to sign up, you get your email, you have to sign in, then you basically start uploading your video. It uploads your video. At the end of the 15 minutes, it tells you that was the wrong format, sorry. And you're like, thank you, you just wasted half an hour of my life. Whereas in Vimeo, I upload the video, it tests if it's the right format, says, like, great, that's a format I can understand, starts uploading the video, and then it says, like, do you want to sign in? And you sign into the website while your video is uploading in the background. That's the kind of experience that the web should be, but it isn't yet, because not many people put the same effort into it. It's a New York company, Vimeo.com. It's a really nice website. Google Maps for addresses. Why should I go out of my way to try to write people instructions how to get to my website when Google Maps has an API for that? I can show a map there and say, people, hey, where do you want to start? They type it in and they get the instructions how to get to my address. Much better than I could ever explain it. And all of this is free. All of that is out there, upcoming for events. If there's events in the city, you can show it up with upcoming. You can have your own events. You can have tickets for that. People sign up for it and you're done. You don't have to build your own system. So look around the web and see what kind of Web 2.0 systems are out there, rather than trying to reinvent them, because you will fail. Everything I put on the web nowadays is being attacked 24/7 by spammers and hackers. So if you want to write your own event handling system, you better be a really good coder. Otherwise, we have another one of those security holes on the web that we don't need to have. Twitter, best example. If you want to do updates, you want to reach people nowadays, yeah, use Twitter. Flickr for photos, same thing. The other way around, you put your content there, you use the system like it's intended to. You don't just upload photos there. You also describe the photos. You put headers above the photos. You put tags on those photos. And when you do that and people see that, they see that you put effort into it and they will add to it. So all of these systems will get comments, will get tags, will get connections and embeds from other people. So you validate your content by putting them in front of people. You have to pay a lot of money for that if you want to do it with usability testing. If you just upload it to one of those systems, people will come back and give you this content. And tags on Delicious and Flickr, used the right way, are great keywords that you can use later on to write copy for your website. Because I always I put some code up, and all of a sudden people start tagging it, and I'm like, wow, I didn't think that was a keyword for it, but they're right. Because people come from other backgrounds, people come in other languages, I get French tags, I get Spanish tags. And these kind of things I never thought of before, and I don't want to think about it, because that's what the web is for. Crowdsourcing, as you call it. Bringing the web to our sites is actually not as hard as we think. I was like, oh God, I don't get any comments anymore. My comments drop down 80%, and I'm like, am I boring or what's going on? But I'm writing for 5 different blogs. I'm writing for Ajaxian.com, for my own one, for the Yahoo Developer Network, and 2 other developer things. And they all dropped. to the bottom. Like, nobody cares about comments anymore, except for TechCrunch, WellyWag, and these kind of things where people try to profile themselves. And I wonder what's going on. And then I found this wonderful system called ChatCatcher. ChatCatcher is a plugin for WordPress. It's also a standalone PHP file or a Drupal module. And what that actually does, it goes to FanFreed, it goes through Twitter, it goes through all these social live update sites, and actually turns them into pingbacks for your blog, or turns them into comments for your blog if you want to turn that on. So if you look at my blog now, and that's the WordPress installation, you see all these things with the avatar. These are actually coming from Twitter. These are not people that went to my website and typed in a comment, but they wrote about my website, and the link they have in their Twitter update is linking to my blog. So I could do that in my logs as well, but I don't have to because of this system. It's very, very useful, and all of a sudden I realize I've got 600 people talking about my blog post. I didn't know that it was that interesting, but all of a sudden I realize people do it. And this is the kind of systems that you should look out for to realize that people are somewhere else. They're not interested. They're not interested in what you do. They're just busy doing other things.
Can you do that with a keyword, like a chat catcher, type in laptops and everybody talking about laptops?
Not like that, but there are systems for that. You could do a Twitter search for laptops. But then again, they talk about laptops. They don't talk about your website. I'm coming back to that. Which is, you can game the social web, but it will bite you in the bum really hard if you do it the wrong way. And you will do it the wrong way if you just do it for keywords. You can get content, but make sure that it actually... If you want to be out there, if you want to play with the other kids in the social web, at least understand it, at least put something back. It's all a give and take. It's so easy to actually take things back, but we're going to come to that in a second. The other thing that we built in Yahoo is called Sideline. And Sideline is a live Twitter search tool that allows you to actually define searches that you want to look at Twitter for. So you can say, look for laptops, look for used desktops, look for my mom, look for Jimmy Hoffa, whatever you want to look for. And it gives you the live results, and you can filter them out, and you can actually favorite them, and all these kind of things that is really hard to do on the Twitter side itself. And that one is built with YUI. It's free, available, and it's actually being tweaked at the moment. It's quite cute done, and professional versions of that one as well, but we just built that to show that it can be done. One professional version of that is CodeTweet, and CodeTweet is a business client for Twitter. Companies like Ford, Starbucks, Coca-Cola, they're all using CodeTweet because it actually allows you to search the whole Twitter universe in real time and find information and be able to answer things. Biggest mistake you can make on Twitter is just use it as a publication channel. If people realize that you're just throwing things on Twitter without answering to people, without actually caring about what people say about your stuff, you will be blocked, and other people will tell you about it. That's just a spam bot. And it happens all the time. So what CodeTweet does for you as well, it allows you to actually set up shifts of people. To say, we do this, we're about to use it for Yahoo as well, that I can say from like 4 o'clock in the afternoon in England to 8 o'clock in the afternoon in England, I'm the one that answers on Twitter if people have problems. Then I go into the time zone of America in the East Coast, and somebody here answers. Then I do it in California, then I do it in China, then I do it in India. So you can basically, you are one person, one profile on Twitter, but have lots and lots of people being able to write in that profile. And that with a normal Twitter client means you have to send the password around and people have to use it in their own clients and so on and so forth. So CodeTweet is a really good way of doing that. It also allows you to monitor keywords and trends, and it gets assignments out there, and it has all kind of marketing materials in it. It's a very clever tool. Another thing that we finally realized, and other companies start getting there as well, is that to be available on the web and to get people and be really relevant anymore, you have to open up your system and allow people to actually use what they're using from your website. In our case, it's like we opened the Yahoo homepage that you can install your own applications. So you can BBC World News on there, you can have Boing Boing on there, or you can update Facebook from the Yahoo homepage. So if you see a news piece that you think is cool, you can click on it and send it up to Facebook, because we have a third-party application system running now on the Yahoo homepage. This is going to be open in a second step as well, that everybody can build applications that, with a good review process, will run on the Yahoo homepage later on. So we do it with partners, with Mint.com, for example. We already did this. and you can update your Twitter from it. The really interesting benefit of this is, as we've built it that way, this is the first time that blind users on the web can update Facebook. Because there's a lot of blind people on the web. They listen to websites. They've got software that reads out to them what's happening on the screen. Facebook is built that way with like frames and all kind of stuff that they have no clue how to reach the form, how to update Facebook. So our interface was built to work with screen readers because one of the developers is blind of the Yahoo homepage. And people can update that now. And that's very important. That's the same thing in your sites. You can, I mean, you have the follow us on Twitter button probably there, but you should also have like send this to Facebook button. People shouldn't have to go somewhere else, copy and paste your URL, copy and paste your text, and then send it to people. I mean, power users will have extensions on their browsers for that, and more browsers will do that. But if you give them now a button right now, hey, tell my friends on Facebook, open up Facebook, pre-filled that form, done. And people don't have to go there all the time. Don't have to go back and forth just because of you. That's one way of doing it. There's lots of software out there, but if you want to really go for it, and I hope people do, and if you don't want to be a developer and you don't think you should be one, don't be one. Just partner with one, buy one, and trust those guys. It's like, it's not like, I give you $200, I don't want to know what you're doing. It's like, hey, I want to build this, what can you do with me? When I always partner with people and I did web development for them, I asked for somebody dedicated in the company that will maintain the website when I'm gone. And I was like, no, we don't do that, we just paid for you now. And I'm like, no, I'll be gone, I'll be off the grid. You can't reach me next week. If something breaks on this website, I won't have to somebody in this company to deal with that website because it's your website, it's your market, it's your content. I have no clue what you guys are doing. And I don't want to know what you guys are doing because I'm too busy for that. If you do something and you partner with a developer, please show them respect because otherwise they will not respect you, will just fleece you. The web is full of really, really cool and juicy data. There's lots of cool stuff all over the place. And I compared it with Heinz Tomato Soup. There's so much data out there, it's just stunning. You can build a website from scratch with no content that you do yourself, and I showed it yesterday, I'm just going to show it later as well, immediately. The problem is that the way we try to get to that data can be a bit clumsy. So that's the kind of access that we do with like random scraping of RSS feeds and then remixing them and like bad encoding in there, half text shown, these kind of things. It doesn't make any sense really. So what we need is an access to the data web that is really, really easy to use. We had a system before called pipes.yahoo.com. We still have this system and you can still use it and it will be there for several years. What Pipes is a visual interface to remix content from the web. So this is something like Visio or a database schema or an architecture software that allows you to get something from here, connect it with something else, filter it down to what you need. And I, for example, I use my Twitter updates. I filter the very important ones with a certain character that I put in my Twitter updates and then put it in a little sidebar in my blog. And I've written that in Pipes. Other people do multiple searches on the web with Pipes. Things like Sideline does for you now, people have done with Pipes before. The really cool thing about Pipes is that it's actually a system where you can build on top of other people's work. So you go to pipes.yahoo.com and you search for something like a task, for example, find a flat in Mountain View, California, and you will find that somebody has written a pipe that scrapes all different real estate websites with Pipes and give it back to you as an RSS feed that you can subscribe to in your Google Reader or in your Outlook. And then if you just go for that, you clone that, you copy it, and just tweak it to what you need to do. So you don't even need to understand the system fully if you just find something where somebody has done the task that you want to fulfill before. Problem with Pipes is that it's this hardcore tin opener. It's a very complex interface when you look at it for the first time, and you don't have a version controlling. So if you want to change something, you have to save it under another name. If you have a really complex pipe and you don't have a really fast computer, the interface can become sluggish. This is great. Pipes, we love it, but we have to find a way to do that programmatically. To find a way to do that from a command line, from some PHP script, I don't want to go to Pipes and change them every time I want to do a different task. It should be something I can do programmatically. And this is why we came up with the Yahoo Query Language, or short YQL, which is a unified interface language to the web. So developer.yahoo.com/YQL. This is basically the syntax of YQL. Select what from service where condition. This could be a translation service. This could be a search engine. This could be a live Twitter update. This could be an image database. This could be anything that people throw on the web as an application interface And this is the language how you can actually access that. Rather than having to go there, read the documentation, try it out, download the code examples, not understanding them, trying to contact them, not getting an answer. So through this interface, we made it that easy to actually remix the web. And we needed it for ourselves because we have lots and lots of APIs internally, and all of them were different because they were built over years. And we just realized it doesn't make any sense that we sit in meeting rooms talking to each other how our APIs are built or how our feeds are built. So let's build an interface that is that easy to understand. Say you want kittens on your website, which everybody should put at least one kitten on a website, it's necessary. Then you can say select star from Flickr photo search where text is kitten. So this one goes to flickr.com, goes to the database, looks for all the photos, tests if the description or the comment under it contain or the file name contains kitten, and then gives you that data back as XML. So this is the kind of data that you get back. You get a diagnostics block that explains to you what happened. If there was a timeout, if there was an error, it's going to show up in there. And you have a results block with all the information of the photos that you want to have. Say if you only want 5 kittens because your website is not big, you cannot put too many kittens on it, then you can limit it with a limit 5 at the end here. And these are the easy things that you can do with YQL. But the really cool thing about YQL is that you can nest those queries as far as you want to. Where can you get this? This is cool, but the. So what can I do with that? It's like, where does it go? There's a console where you can do it, but in the end, YQL is an API in itself. So you have this endpoint, query.yahooapis.com/v1, public YQL, q equals query, format equals format. So the query is the things that we had before. So select star from Flickr photo search where text equals kitten limit 5 would go into that query parameter on that URL, and you can open it in the browser and you can see that data immediately. The format is either XML or JSON. JSON means that you can use the data in JavaScript, so you don't need to do any server-side coding or anything. You can put it in a block with a little script block. So for example, this would be the where text is kitten 5 questions thing. And that one just is in a script block, and then write a function with a callback parameter, and in there I get all the data. So in JavaScript, I would have all this information to actually display on the website with 3 lines of code, nothing to do on the website. I could put it in any HTML document. I don't need any PHP, Java, ASP, or other abominations. I just can do it directly on the client. So the main thing about is what you can do with that is you can remix the web. You could use several services and put them together and build something completely new out of 2 different backgrounds. So what you can do with that, for example, is this. Select star from Flickr Photos Info, where photo ID in select ID from Flickr Photo Search, where on Earth ID in select where on Earth ID from GeoPlaces, where text is London, UK, and license is 4. What might that be doing? It starts with select where on Earth ID from GeoPlaces, where text is London.UK. And that one defines London, UK as a numeric ID. You could do just a search for London to find photos. But what's the problem with that?
Ontario.
One thing. Other thing, if you have, for example, a travel website and you want to show pictures of Paris by night, one night in Paris might not be a good search term. This one defines London as a geographical number. It realizes this is London. So if I put Paris in there, it will be Paris, France. It will not be Paris Hilton. So that's a way of making sure that you have that. So this one defines London as a number. Then I find photos in London, select ID from Flickr photo search from this Where on Earth ID, and then I get all the information of the photos that I need to have. I make sure that I have the right license, and that's the very important point. License equals 4 on Flickr means it's Creative Commons by attribution, so you can use that commercially. All you have to do is link either show the name of the guy that uploaded the photo or link it back to Flickr. That's basically all you need to do to show these photos. Make sure that you do it because people will come down on you like a ton of bricks if you show their photos and you're not allowed to. Then you can display them using free widgets. This is something I've put together with the YUI user interface library in like 5 minutes. And I've coached people when I did trainings, when I did workshops with that did not know HTML. And after 8 hours, after 4 hours, they were able to do these kind of things with that kind of data because it's that easy to use them. The YUI user interface library is completely open source. It's BSD licensed. You can use it forever for whatever you want. You could redistribute it if you wanted to. Google uses it on the iGoogle homepage, our CSS layouts. And we don't care because it's great. We built them to work. If Yahoo, what we realized, we have 37 locations worldwide. We have thousands of developers. If we allow every developer to do whatever they want, we will never have code that can be maintained. We will never have code that you can hand over. So that's why we built the YUI library to allow us to do that. The other thing that I've built with this is basically this one. It has you give it a location like Frankfurt. You get the description from Wikipedia. You get a map from Yahoo Maps. You get photos from Flickr. You get events from Upcoming, and you get the weather from Yahoo Weather. And all of this is done in like 15 lines of PHP using some clever YQL statements. So this is something you could build yourself. The main point is APIs. APIs, application programming interfaces, are what companies release so people can remix their data on the web and bring it out and find new uses for their data that they hadn't thought of. The amount of stuff that is built on top of our data APIs that we never thought of and is an amazing amount of innovation is just wonderful to see. And we could never pay people to come up with these creative ideas. We just get the data out for free and let people play with it. This is programmableweb.com, which is an interface that shows you all the APIs available. And there's like 1,500 APIs, data APIs. All of them are different. So it's quite a task to go through them. But YQL is an interface that allows you to do that pretty easily. Say, for example, current trends on Twitter. Best thing right now if you want to flood people with keywords. This is the most important thing that's happening at the moment. Live right now, these update every 10 seconds, are different every 15 seconds. And this is just the call in the API. This you can put in the browser, and it will give you the trends right now in JSON format as shown here. If you do XML at the end, it gives you back as XML. And this is the kind of like most basic API you will find out there. And there's lots and lots of cool stuff like that out there. Problem with APIs is, of course, that things happen. So Twitter was dead for 2 days because some Russian blogger was talking about Georgia and some other Russian people actually basically DDoS attacked Twitter, Google, Facebook, and all these websites so he wouldn't write about Georgia being cool for some reason. And it's just amazing that it was possible to do an attack nowadays like that. I mean, denial of service attack means you get lots and lots of computers to go to your website until it keels over. You would say, oh, that costs a lot of money. Like, lots of people must have lots of computers then. What you do is normally you write a virus that goes around the world, infects computers, and then every computer with that virus on it is an attack computer for you. So this is what happened with Twitter the last few days. And now they're sorting it out, but it's not that easy to do. The other problem with APIs is that they change, and without companies telling you that. And if it's a small API, do you know if it's going to be available in the next few months? So if you do something with APIs, use them, but also cache them. Make sure that you have something local that if it dies, you still have something to show for the next day until it's up again. You can now take all this stuff and take all the content from the web and put it on your landing pages and do really cool stuff with that. Like, oh, go look at that website. I can relay 6,000 domains tomorrow with relevant content on there and I'll be God and everybody goes to my websites. But there are some problems with that. As you can see here, this is the main text box where you can put 3 lines of information for your lower third biographic. So systems like that, people forget to put things in. And if your systems, what you write, your scraping systems are not clever enough, you might have things like that on your site, which doesn't really help anybody. So there's content issues. With the content that you display when you scrape it randomly from websites or RSS feeds, you are not quite sure if that really is the content that you want to display. If you hotlink, for example, a photo from my website, that's a bad idea. Because I'm going to replace that with something you don't want to show your mom. And that's going to show up in the middle of your website. Rest assured, it will happen. Make sure that if you steal other people's stuff, that you actually play nice and that you realize, or even tell them if necessary, pay them. Context is another big problem, of course. If you have a website about laptops and you scrape some things and then you have lots of news next to it that the HP laptops explode, that's not going to help you either. Or you show Paris and you didn't do a clever search and you see the latest downloads for Paris Hilton sex tape next to your, hey, here's a family-friendly trip to Paris website. If you don't look at that stuff, if you don't have a human looking after your content, it will be dangerous. People would, things will show up that you don't want to have. That's a big problem of UGC anyways. User-generated content, big buzzword 3 years ago, 4 years ago almost. Oh yeah, everybody's a writer on the web, everybody builds the web, and you don't have to do anything. People will write your reviews, people will write your comments, people will build your website for you, and suckers, and you make money with that. That's awesome. Problem is, first of all, there's loads and loads of spammers on there that will game your system to whatever degree they can. The other thing is that a lot of people on the web are out there that want to give their information to people, and they shouldn't. or they should learn writing first, or they shouldn't do it drunk. It's unbelievable what kind of information you just find in UGC systems as big as Yahoo Answers. I mean, when you build up something and you have like 6,000 users, not a problem. But if somebody like Yahoo builds something like that, people want to game it and people want to put it on there. Most used question we found is, am I pregnant? And how the hell should I know? Most used tag on Flickr, photo. A tag is something I put on a piece of content to give it extra meaning that's not part of the original content. To make people aware that there's more to that than actually just what I'm showing. So photo on a photo is not a clever tag, but it's what people entered because they didn't understand what a photo, what a tag was. It wasn't explained to them. Placement is another big problem. Where you put your UGC content should also be available to people. If I put something on Flickr and you show it next to something that I don't approve of, I can go and I can sue you. Unless you have a terms and conditions and you have the right to use my things. Facebook had this wonderful problem lately. Every photo that you upload belongs to Facebook, no matter what you do with it. You have to go into your preferences and actually tick a box to specifically say, you're not allowed to use my photos. So there was this lady, a female blogger, and her husband went on Facebook and found her photo in one of these ads, find single ladies in your area. Which is not good, and it doesn't reflect nice on Facebook. And the same thing will happen to you if you just randomly place things without telling people. Because I don't want to see my content show up next to something that I don't approve of. And I get this a lot. People scrape my blog for like technical content and then show it next to really bad training materials, for example, or really bad books. Like, look, bro, he endorses it. No, I don't. And I will come down on you if you do that. Legal issues, of course. Are you allowed to show that stuff? Do you really have the right to show people's things? Do you make people aware of it? It's easy to make people write comments for it. It's easy to make people write reviews. But if I realize after two times that what I did belongs to you and not to somebody else, I will tell everybody in your social networks that that's a bad idea to write reviews here and link to your competitor. Well, I have a terms and conditions that says, like, it's your property, you do it. Great social websites know this. For example, Doppler.com. Doppler.com is a travel website where I can say where I'm traveling at the moment. It's a London company. It's great because I fill it out. I'm flying to Toronto, and it shows me who's living here, who I can meet, what other conferences are happening at that time, and so on and so forth. So people put their travel schedule inside Doppler. And what Doppler does is says, like, all this content is yours. So if you sign out of Doppler, if you're unhappy with Doppler and you say, like, I don't want to be part of you anymore, they offer you a zip file of all the data that you entered in the last 2 years to take away with you and delete it from the database. That's one big problem. People are scared of commenting. People are scared of uploading stuff because they don't know if it's going to be there in a week's time. So it's quite cool if you do something like that to offer that to people and say, like, here's a way to actually download your things. So let's talk about some demos and resources that we have. One of the things I showed yesterday already is my personal homepage, and that exactly works that way. I don't have anything on this page that I've hard-coded except for my bio and my contact details in the bottom. The other things are from SlideShare, are from Flickr, are from my blog, are from Delicious. Every time I go on the social web where I am every day and I do something new, like this presentation will be uploaded to SlideShare later if it's fast enough, and then it will show up here. I don't have to go back to my website. I don't have to update it. It will automatically update as it's pulling that data from my feed on SlideShare and caches it for me using YQL. And this is the kind of stuff that you can do nowadays. You don't, instead of building the website and paying people to maintain them, go out on the web, put your content on the web, and do it yourself. Upload a new client shot, for example. Here's a new domain that I had. Here's a photo of a website that they built with it. That's on Flickr right now. Little description, little title. Go to the Flickr feed, get the data back. You can display that next to any of your parked domains. Here are the people that I sold domains to. This is what they built with it. And you maintain it on Flickr. You don't have to go anywhere for that. You just go to flickr.com, sign in, do your stuff, and it automatically converts it to any format that you need. Developer.yahoo.com is what I work for, and this is where all our APIs are available for you, with documentation, with downloads, with videos, with screencasts, even for people that are not technical. There are some very interesting things in there. One of the things is a design pattern library that basically explains to you how people go for searching for data on the web, or how do people fulfill a certain task. We do a lot of usability testing with people. I mean, for example, we had a form. We said, like, pick a date. How would you do that? What would you like to see? And then you have the date picker pattern in there that explains to you, hey, this is what you do, and this is a pop-up calendar, and that gives you the data. And otherwise, it's an open text form, and just type in your calendar date that you want to have. All of these things come with explanations, come with test results, and actually some of them go for a widget that you can copy and paste out of the box as well, like one of these JavaScript widgets that you can put on your website. So if you deal with a developer and you want to build an interface, instead of having to discuss for 6 months what kind of information flow you want to have there, look at these patterns and say, like, something that Yahoo is doing, and here's the thing you can use. And out of a sudden, you shave $500 off the whole contract, if he goes for it. But he should be, because a clever developer is lazy. I'm a terribly lazy person because I don't want to do the same thing twice. I do it the right the first time, so I don't have to do it again. If I'm clever, I don't have to do it again. I just have something in my backhand that I can use. Keyword Finder is something that I built on top of Yahoo Boss, and that one actually gives you keywords for something that you type in different languages. So you type in a keyword, you select the language, you hit the big go button, and it gives you the first 20 results in Yahoo and the keywords that people entered to end on these websites. It's not keywords that that we, with artificial intelligence, get out of the text. It's something that people entered to end up on this website. So you get them to copy and paste, and that's perfectly easy to do. That was another 30-minute code thing. It's really easy to do with Yahoo Boss if you have a developer that knows PHP. SlideShare is just another really good resource, but what I'm looking here is YSLO. YSLO is a Firefox extension that actually analyzes your websites in terms of performance. How fast is this website? How fast does it load? Where do you lose people? It's amazing how performance is very, very important on websites. There's one big company that I can't name. They changed their product page on their website, and it was 200 milliseconds slower than it was before, which resulted in an 8% drop in sales, which in the size of that company was several million dollars. 200 milliseconds. That we can't even snap that with our fingers. But this is how fast sometimes the subconscious feeling of a user when he goes to a website kicks in and says, like, that's too slow, I don't want to use that anymore. So what YSLO does, it runs through the website that you have, it gives it marks from A to F, and it gives you the tips what you can do to work around these problems. So for example, you have an F here for put JavaScript at bottom. The JavaScript is all in the head of the document there, and when a browser goes to a document, it loads the JavaScript, it stops, loads the JavaScript, executes the JavaScript, starts doing something with it, and then it starts with the rest of the HTML. If you put your JavaScript at the bottom of the document, your website shows up, and then it starts doing all the JavaScript stuff. So that's one of the tricks that you have in there. It's a great tool to go to a client, and when you want to go into development, to basically show, hey, I can shave 2 seconds off your front page. That means so and so much K saved in terms of traffic. That means so and so much many more happy users. It's a great tool to go for. GeoMaker is something I built and ended up on TechCrunch with it. And this basically allows you to go and either enter a text or a URL, and then it analyzes the text of that website, all the text that you entered, and it gives you the geographical locations in them, and you can filter them out and just get the ones that you want to have. That is very important, and it will be more and more important because we're mobile. We have laptops, we travel around the world, we have mobile phones, well, you have cell phones, and people would love to find information about where they are at the moment. And you can do that with looking for Paris again, but you might get Paris Hilton again. But if you have a latitude and longitude which you can get from the mobile phone, and your text has been run through a system like that, and has some microformats in it that come with this location, your text will be the first to show up, because that's like, yeah, that's about Toronto, and it's definitive about Toronto. So you can take any text, run it through GeoMaker, filter out the things that you don't want to have, and then you get it as a copy and paste map. So if you want to show a map on your pages, GeoMaker is the system to use. There's even an API for it, so you don't have to go through the interface. You can do that with one single line of code. It's based on PlaceMaker, which is another API that we offer. And I just wanted to build that interface so people don't have to read through a documentation of PlaceMaker. And now I'm talking to several newspapers for using that in their news pages. Blind search is an interesting thing because it allows people to test the quality of different search engine results. So Google, Bing, and Yahoo next to each other. But when you just enter something, it doesn't show you which is which. So you have to press a button, which one you like, and then it shows you the three different logos. But what is it cool for you is just quickly use a keyword, use blind search to actually test against all these three search engines in one. And it's an interesting little interface, and that's something you could build with YQL in like 20 minutes as well if you wanted to. Correlator is something that's on our sandbox, and what that one does, it's a search engine that I think the search engines will go towards. So instead of just giving you one list with everything on this planet, you can filter down to the things that you want to know about. You can filter down, for example, Wikipedia results, names, places, events, concepts, news, and answers. And the really interesting thing here is the names one. So if you do a search and you find somebody's names, it actually builds a mesh of people that are connected to that person. So you can serve a people space with that kind of interface. Give it a go, just enter something in there. It's a really interesting little concept. This is something where Google and where Yahoo is going as well, because we realize catch-all search doesn't do it anymore. This is the Developer Evangelism Handbook that I've written in 3 evenings, because I wanted to explain to people what I'm doing, and it's being translated now for people as well. So if you want to know and use the social web, this is the chapter to read. It's going to be 40 minutes of your life, but it shows you all the things that I talked about today with like links to click and things to think about. And there's a donate button if you want to press it. That's fine too. This is the book that I've written on the whole subject. It's 2 years old, so it's not quite up to date, but it's nice and green, so I wanted to show it. The last thing I want to talk about is that it's about time that you play nice about this. As I said, if you use the social web and you abuse it, it will come down to you and bite you hard. Because people put their life onto social webs. People put their personal things and information in there. If I spend 20 minutes or 10 minutes to write a review of a restaurant, I want to tell people about my experience. I want to tell people about why this is a cool place to meet. I want to tell people why it's my personal opinion to be there. I could be a spammer and just fill it with random stuff, but I spent like 5 minutes of my life, which is a lot of money and a lot of time, to do this. If you now take my information, scrape it, and put it somewhere else next to something that I hate you. And I will tell people to start hating you as well. It's all about emotions on the social web, and it's about personality. It's not about gaming it. It's not about like finding the software to fill it automatically for you. It is you. And if people on Twitter, for example, that don't have their photo on Twitter, haven't understood Twitter. It's about you as a person updating and talking to people. It's not about like a funny icon or like something that is just a random logo of your company. It's about you bearing your information and offering people to chat with them. This is what you do in the social web. You share information and you share your emotions as well. And to end with, there's a wonderful example, which is colalife.org. Coca-Cola is a company that is considered evil by a lot of people. And Coca-Cola is also a company that has distribution channels worldwide with cold storage facilities. So what this person has done with colalife.org is go to Facebook, go to Twitter, go to any social network that would listen and allow him to update and say, I'm going to petition to Coca-Cola that they have a special kind of device that you can put in the Coke bottles to bring medication into third world countries that don't have medication. This was rehydration medication, this was contraceptives, and they have to be chilled to arrive and not be inefficient. So he was talking to Coca-Cola for several years and said like, oh, no, well, that doesn't work, you can't do that, it's too expensive. And with the pressure of Facebook and Twitter and lots of people asking Coca-Cola, millions of people, now he has it done. Coca-Cola now delivers free medication in third world countries because somebody used the social web for something really, really good that he really, really believed in. And the interesting thing about branding, I talked to him and I'm like, so ask Pepsi as well, so you get even more countries. And he's like, oh, no, I can't do that now, Coca-Cola. And I'm like, it's called Cola Life. It's not Coca-Cola Life. It's Cola Life. You can ask any other company as well. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're right. So he's doing that one now as well. And this is just the power of the social web. And this is, to me, what the social web is about. It's about my emotions, about my connections. It's not about getting content and scraping it and putting it somewhere. It's not about showing off. It's about finding people and chatting with them. I've had people that I've emailed 8 years ago, and they're really busy, they don't answer email anymore. On Twitter, I find them again. On Flickr, I know what they've just been on a holiday. So if I go to somebody and I want to start talking to him, find something where they are first and then start the conversation with that. Every conversation I start by doing, can I do something for that person? Because once I've done that, I've got a foot in the door. and he listens to me much more than just me going there, can you do this for me? No, I can't. But if you go, for example, to Flickr and see somebody just had a great holiday, and you just go on Twitter, hey, you've just been at that place, I've been in the island next to it. Well, is it still like this? Is it going on like that? And you start a conversation, and then you're like, oh, by the way, that article that I wanted to write, can you help me with doing tech editing? Just play the system by being yourself and by being friendly and by being emotional. Social web is about emotions. It's not about things. If you build a social network just by saying, oh, now connect to random people, yes, you will have 6,000 users on the first day. 5,700 of those will be bikini ladies that are actually spammers in Nigeria. Use the social web as a human, not as a machine, and use the social web to better your content, not to get all your content, and you will have a great, great development world out there. And that's all I wanted to talk about, so thank you very much.